Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, everybody, to a special episode of Cinema Royale. I am Travis Hobson of PunchDrunkCritics.com, and I am live from the Sundance Film Festival, where I have just finished speaking with Justin Simeon. He is the director of Bad Hair. You may remember a few years ago, I actually spoke with Justin before, after his directorial debut, Dear White People, made a huge splash here at Sundance. And then when it came out, it was quite the controversial film, became a big hit, launched a TV series and everything. Now Justin's back with Bad Hair, and it's a completely different beast, almost literally. It's a horror satire set in the late 80s. It's about an aspiring TV VJ who gets a weave in order to fit in with the culture, the expected culture at the time, only to discover that her weave has a mind of its own and a taste for blood. The movie is crazy. It's a lot of fun. I dug it, and I really dug talking to Justin about Bad Hair, some of his horror influences, in particular Asian horror, of which I had seen the movie The Wig, which is the one that really kind of inspired him to make this movie. We talked about the importance of telling black stories, in particular black women's stories, and his love of Marvel's X-Men, which matches my own. And he wants to direct an X-Men movie very, very badly, which I would be totally down for. So here is that interview with Justin Simeon talking about Bad Hair. I hope you enjoy it.
Well, I mean, the last time I talked to you, you know, the whole thing I remember is all still sort of overwhelming.
Is that X-Men? Okay, it's
like every black Marvel character.
Oh, okay, got it. Okay, all right,
yeah,
cool.
I had to get that.
That's on Facebook. All right, cool.
Yeah.
That's the movie that needs to be made.
You know, that would be a cool movie to make, a Bishop movie. He was one of my favorite, he's still one of my favorite X-Men, although not to get into the X-Men rabbit hole.
I'm happy to get into.
Dude, I learned how to read on X-Men.
Comics. Same. I learned. I knew I wanted to be a filmmaker off of X-Men, a cartoon. Like I literally was like, I want to make stuff like this. But I literally didn't even know it was called director. I was just like, I want to pick when it's a close-up and what is the. I just want to pick the images.
Dude, the X-Men are coming back, man. You need to put your name in the hat.
I would gladly love my name to be in the hat. Because you can
voice that though.
The thing about the X-Men, why I think it should be a black director especially, is because it's always been an allegory for the black experience in America.
Exactly.
It's always been there.
Which like, the comics have you know, occasionally get away from.
Yeah.
They forget that.
But the 60s ones, man, it's so clear.
Yeah.
And even like you can feel it when the culture starts to change its opinion on Malcolm X. Mm-hmm. You can feel Magneto's character starts to change. It's like it's
interesting now because Xavier and Magneto are more aligned in the comics right now.
Yeah.
You know, more than ever. So, well, very, we need to talk X-Men someday.
I know, let's talk about
we need to talk X-Men someday. But let's talk about Bad Hair, which I literally just came from.
Oh, cool.
So I just saw it.
All right.
And I'm going to tell you what my immediate reaction was.
Sure.
Was it reminded me of a movie that a friend showed me years ago. This is a good thing, it's a good thing that it reminded me of it. It was a movie called The Wig.
Yeah.
You heard of it? It was like a Korean horror or something. I saw it one time, a friend showed it to me one night, and I was like, this kind of reminds me of that a little bit. Did you?
Absolutely.
You seen it?
That's The Wig and another movie called X Day.
I know that one.
It translates to extensions.
Mm.
And actually, like, there's really a whole subgenre of Korean.
Yeah, I learned about that later.
Hair horror movies. That really is how this movie began. Me and the producers of Dear White People had a conversation about that movie and X Day and the genre in general.
Yeah.
And I went sort of looking for the American equivalent, and it wasn't there. Mm. There's like a couple things. There's an episode of Amazing Stories called Hell Toupee. About an evil toupee, and then there's this anthology movie, but they're basically men's stories.
Yeah.
And the idea of like the final girl being the girl possessed by the wig, I was like, that's a black story, but like, you know, I knew, and really, this is literally how it happened. I was like, we were talking about, I was like, I think that's a, you know, it was kind of like a joke. We were like, oh, that'd be like a crazy movie.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went home and I started thinking, like, I love crazy movies. And I grew up on psychological thrillers that, like, I felt like I could never make because you didn't really see black people in them. And, you know, the things that I love about specifically Rosemary's Baby and all of the De Palma movies, Dressed to Kill, Body Snatchers, Body Double. Body Snatchers is not Brian De Palma.
I thought of body horror when I was
Carrie. Yeah, The Fly, The Shining, of course, is like the cinematic crowning achievement.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, what's so cool about those movies is that, like, white men have been able to sort of just go nuts with those movies as filmmakers and do anything. Like,
yeah.
You can pull from any tradition. You can pull from screwball comedy. You can pull from camp. You can pull from B-movie and make something that sort of operates on a few levels. Like, there's the ride of those movies, of just, like, going through the thriller of it, but then there's, like, the subconscious shit that, like, you don't even think about for a while. And it's, like, you know, I remember when it dawned on me that The Shining is a statement about, like, the genocide of Native Indians, and I was like, and it's so clear when you see that,
yeah.
But it's not at all.
Once you hear it, and you're like, you can't
not, unsee it,
right,
it's all
yeah.
over the movie, mm-hmm. And I was like, wow, like, it'd be so interesting to feel something like that from a black perspective. And I started to play with the idea of doing it as that kind of movie, as a psychological thriller. And I started thinking of setting it in 1989 because that was the year that The Weave really took over American popular culture.
Yeah.
That's the year of Rhythm Nation.
Yeah.
New
Jack Swing era, man.
New Jack Swing era, precipitated by Pleasure Principle and all that. And I was like, that's the year. And
that was the most ingenious part for me. Like,
yeah.
I loved that fact, the fact that you put it in that era. And I was, and not to interrupt you, but I was talking to people afterwards, and some of my white colleagues who don't know anything about the era and didn't understand why the dude wearing the high top boots was funny to me.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I just started laughing.
I mean,
and the mention of Teddy Riley made me laugh. And I'm like, because I got Teddy Riley on my phone.
Right, right.
You know, and
the
stuff
right.
like that that I know a lot of people like. When some of my white critics are going to review it, they're not going to be able to speak to that.
Sure.
So I love that you said it in that period.
Well, I thought, like, I thought, why can't I tell something that is just as subversive that we accept from white men all the time?
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's Django Unchained or whatever. The movies I mentioned before. We accept that all the time, the sort of explosion of our culture, so that we can look at it all these different angles. I thought I wanted to do that from a black perspective, and it felt like it had to be a black woman at the center of this film,
mm-hmm.
you know? And so, really what I did is I literally called the smartest black woman I knew who would call me back. I took them to Palm Springs, and I said, talk to me for 4 days.
Mm-hmm.
Let's watch movies, but let's talk. And what I got to was, like, the horror of it isn't the weave itself, which is a possessed weave. Like, that cat is out the bag. The horror of it is the societal conditioning that makes Anna feel like she doesn't have a choice
mm-hmm.
at a certain point, and then makes the other women around her sort of antagonistic to her because of the choice that she made. And this sort of system that sort of feels like it's just out of our reach and just out of our conscious understanding, that seems to somehow be moving us, we think, higher and higher up the ladder, only to kind of shove us off on the other side. I felt like that to me felt like the horror that was coming through from my conversations. The specific experiences of straightening hair and getting a weave putting in aside, the real horror is feeling like in a given situation you have to be a certain kind of black,
mm-hmm.
whether that is a black woman with braids or a black woman with straight hair or a black woman, you have to very neatly fit into that box in order to not only survive or thrive, but just to be seen at all, just even be invited to the party. And
very school days-esque in a lot of ways is
sure.
one of the movies I thought of. And I think you touched on just a tiny bit in Dear White People, too. But there's those societal things that pit us against each other, you know, like we saw like we saw a little bit in Dear White People. We see in this and in School Days, you know, these things that make us, that hold us back from uniting.
Right.
It's interesting.
Well, that is and that to me is truly, and I, you know, we were talking before you came in here, and that to me is the thing that you can't really just say in a straightforward way in 2 hours. And so much of the movie is like, you know, it's meant to be a thrill ride. It's like you're supposed to like experience it and like laugh a little bit, be scared a little bit. Like, okay, that was, eat some popcorn, be like, what the fuck? Like, yell at the screen, whatever. Argue about it in the lobby. But the movie I wanted to make is the movie that starts to do its work the next day. Mm-hmm. When you start to like remember certain aspects of it that didn't quite match up with it. The sort of what the fuck of the ending of the movie is part of that too. It's like when you see Jack Nicholson in the picture from 1927 in The Shining, that makes you go, okay, I have no idea what, okay, I thought I knew what movie I just watched, but actually I have no idea what fucking movie I just watched, so I gotta go watch it again.
Yeah.
And then maybe when you watch it again, you start to get into like, wait, what were the lyrics of the Sandra song that Anna's obsessed with? What are they talking about in that movie of the week that she's obsessed with? What is that Moss Hair Girl story thing all about? Is there real African folklore like that? You know,
was that Moss Girl story real?
The Moss Hair Girl story is not real.
Okay, I was going to ask when. I was wondering if that was something that was actual or...
That's something
that
we made up.
Made up, okay.
But the other... We mentioned something, the Flying African story. The witch, skinny, don't you know me? They're just like these little mentions to maybe get you curious about the world in which I'm trying to play in. Because to me, that's like... No, that's like, those are the kind of movies I aspire to make, and that typically I don't really see about Black culture.
Yeah.
And they're complicated. They're sort of designed to be re-entered a few times and explored in a few different angles, and there's a lot to unpack here. Because it's the very culture that we get to celebrate ourselves in, you know, New Jack Swing at the time.
Yeah.
Then becomes like our own oppression, because... Suddenly, New Jack Swing is now being done by New Kids on the Block, and it's being done by NSYNC, and it's being done by Britney Spears, and now it's just called pop. And New Jack Swing, as a genre, is just taken off.
Yeah.
It's just taken off the list of things.
I love that line where it's like, New Jack Swing is the future.
Yeah.
And I like laughed out loud.
Got two more years. You got 2 years for white people start doing it, for Nirvana, and then white people start doing it. And then you got four more years on R&B. But it's like, you know... It also is like it's an exploration of a system that's very complicated, that is designed for us to not know how it operates until it's too late. And that's why Anna is constantly being presented these she's always given two choices, if you notice. Like, she's always being given things that feel like the tool she needs to get out of the moment. But there's always a price, whether it's the door code, or it's the supposed gun under the table, or it's the pair of scissors, or the weave itself. It's like, you know, at a certain point you start to wake up to the fact that we're actually like rats in a maze.
Yeah.
And we're being pitted against each other, and we're being pointed towards the cheese, and no one ever thinks to look up and think about like, who put us in this maze, who built this maze? And, you know, we're sort of conditioned our whole lives to aspire to get to the cheese in the center of the maze, but like, fuck the cheese. I'm in a fucking I'm in an experiment right now.
Yeah.
And other people are benefiting from my effort, but I'm not. And I don't know, I just really wanted to create a mindfuck like that. And, you know, I know that traditionally, I don't know, someone put it to me this way, like, you know, man, you just throw darts, like, that's what you do. But traditionally, like, Black movies don't do this.
Right.
Like, specifically, I don't know, I feel an enormous amount of pressure as a Black storyteller, as a Black filmmaker, to pare things down, to keep the message clear and simple, to keep it moral, to have a moral. There's a yes or a no, there's a right or a wrong. But there's a power in movies that don't feel confined to that, and they typically are white movies. And I wanted to bring Black perspectives and Black experiences to that, and let us have the kinds of conversations that white people get to have about The Shining and Rosemary's Baby, but on a more personal level,
right?
Because these are things that actually affect us. You know, why is it that the tools that we have to celebrate ourselves always become the objects of our oppression? Like, I just felt like that was an interesting thing.
Well, we can't. I mean, there's a reason why we can't make those kinds of movies, just because if we fail, then we don't get more opportunities.
Well, I made one.
Yeah, you did. You did. Yeah. You did make
because
one.
Just like, I can't get out of bed without pushing on those borders. You know, I just like, I'm just bored.
Yeah.
Making something that's like obvious. I don't know. It bores me.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, all I can hope is that like we sort of like. What I love about Sundance especially is I get to show the movie, I get to have some real conversations, I get to have some real feedback.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the movie has a commercial level to it, but I also think it has cultural levels to it that are going to be different for us than it's going to be for white audiences that see it.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing about a festival screening is it's the first stop on the journey.
Yep.
You know, the movie, the version of this movie that eventually comes out might be a little different. The conversation may shift a little bit. There may be more conversations that lead up to the film's ultimate release. And this gives me an opportunity to be in the community as a storyteller. Be like, okay, y'all, I made some crazy shit. What do we think? How are we gonna mold? How does this live as a conversation?
Yeah.
I don't know. Those are things that make me want to be a filmmaker. And if I'm not supposed to do it, I really it's hard to help myself.
All right, that was my interview with Justin Simeon talking about Bad Hair. I particularly love that part at the end where he's talking about making movies that speak to black people, telling black stories and things like that. And, you know, really having the opportunity to throw stuff against the wall, quote unquote. Not a lot of black filmmakers get that. And Justin, in two movies, has established himself as one of those directors who can. All right, so that's my interview with Justin Simeon talking about Bad Hair. Live here from the Sundance Film Festival. I hope you enjoyed it, and I hope you're enjoying all of the Sundance coverage that you can find at punchdrunkcritics.com right now. We'll be back with a new full episode of Cinema Royale this weekend. Thank you very much. Bye.